Welcome to Comic Culture here on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, now also podcast on comicbookdaily.com. I'm your co-host, Walter Duralia, and I'm joined as always by my illustrious co-host, Chris Owen, professor of comic history at Hamilton's Mohawk College. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Walt. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's Wednesday today.
It is Wednesday today, and as we know, this is New Comic Book Day, our favorite day of the week.
It is, and Chris, we always start the show with mentioning some glorious new releases that are coming out.
Glorious. All right, well, what glorious new releases do we have today?
Well, I'm going to highlight from Marvel, Ultimate Comics, Spider-Man number 4 hits the stands today,
which
is good. Good for Spidey fans.
Ultimate Comics.
Yes.
Not Ultimate Spider-Man, but Ultimate Comics.
Well, they changed it. Ultimate, you know, remember the Ultimate Universe.
Right.
Started back when, 99, 2000,
I think. Well, I'm just saying, just for a minute, just pretend that I'm one of our myriad of listeners out there.
That don't know anything.
Right.
Well, the whole Ultimate Universe had a big shakeup. All the titles that were going back a few months ago, Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Right.
They all ended their run. And it all kind of came to a head in the Ultimatum story arc, which
right,
is a miniseries.
Right.
And now that everything is kind of settled, they've relaunched a few new titles under the header Ultimate Comics, and then one is Spider-Man.
Okay.
Ultimate Comics Avengers.
Right.
So it's kind it's kind of a relaunch.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
It's kind of a ploy, I guess.
Well, absolutely. I didn't want to say anything, but you know, relaunches and new number ones, it's always a good way of getting people started in comics.
Right. It's listen, there's no jumping on point like number one.
No, absolutely. That's right. Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Astonishing X-Men hits the stands today. Number 32.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yeah. And now, do we know who's writing and drawing that? Is that still
No, it's not.
Not Stuart Immonen. He was doing Ultimate, sorry.
Yeah, Ultimates. Yeah. No. This title started with Joss Whedon writing
and John Cassidy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I honestly don't know who's writing it now.
Okay.
The thing, though, is this is a relatively, successful X-Men title.
You're having trouble saying the word successful?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I just want to clarify that.
I also wanted to say Spider-Man.
Right. Okay, all right, fair enough.
I stopped myself.
Okay, good enough.
I mean, X-Men, the whole X universe is huge.
Yes, absolutely.
And Astonishing.
Well, you know what? Astonishing was a really good book because when it came out, you didn't have to read all the other X titles in order to enjoy Astonishing X-Men.
Yes.
And it was being written by Joss Whedon, who, of course, was the creator of the Buffy franchise,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so a very good writer, and you know, he really cut his chops well into the whole X-Men franchise as well. The stuff that he was writing for X-Men really harkened back to the days of Chris Claremont and John Byrne.
That's what people were saying.
And,
yes,
you know,
yes.
he really got a feel for what those characters were all about. And I think that combined with John Cassidy's artwork, really, really fine, detailed, really amazing, lifelike
art. It was
good
stuff.
Awesome book. If anybody wanted to go out and buy an X-Men book that, you know, was a fan of the old X-Men, didn't know what to do because they still like the old characters but didn't want to get involved in the new stuff, go out and buy Astonishing X-Men.
Right. And the first two or three story arcs or four story arcs are available in graphic novels.
Absolutely,
now, so.
Yes.
Jumping over onto DC, we have Jonah Hex number 49.
Cool.
Hits the stands.
Cool.
Today.
Yeah. I didn't think that would have lasted that
Neither
long.
Neither did I, and that's why I wanted to mention it. Now,
yeah.
I mean, the movie's coming out soon,
yes.
right?
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin, sorry. He is playing Jonah Hex, I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, perhaps DC, well, first of all, the hype around the movie could be driving a bit of sales.
Yeah, for sure.
Second of all, DC could be holding on, even if it was weak, to exploit the movie coming out.
Absolutely. So, you know what? When the movie comes out, of course, the sales of the books will hopefully go up as long as it's a good movie. And of course, the trades will sell well and that kind of thing.
Well, I guess in any kind of movie scenario is the natural thing would be, I'm just going to use arbitrary numbers here. If you have 10 people reading it and during a movie, you know, it spikes to 20.
Right.
Well, then after the movie, you hope at least two of those 10 new ones stay around.
That's right, yeah.
So you end up, you know, with 12, so you get like a 20% overall long-term increase in readership, because you know it's going to spike heavily around the movie for interest, but
for sure.
I don't think that's sustainable long-term. No. All right, Chris, I think we'll end it right there on the new this week's.
Cool, okay.
And we're going to dive into some industry news.
All right, industry news, sounds good. But, you know, I just want to say one thing about Jonah Hex. As far as I know, it's still being written by Jimmy Palmiotti, who... Jimmy Palmiotti started off and still does a lot of inking. Like, that was mainly his thing. But he started doing a lot of writing, and now that he's doing a lot of writing for Jonah Hex, I think it's great that he's sort of branching off and becoming his own tour de force.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Where am I going to start industry news?
With your heart, Walt.
With my heart. How about with what comes first?
Okay, sure.
All right. iPhones Marvel.
Okay.
Okay, so Marvel is starting to push some of its comics onto the iPhones.
Oh, cool.
And there's three companies involved with actually, I guess, I'm not sure how this works. I'm not savvy in this thing, but there's a company called Comixology.
Okay.
A company called Iverse.
Okay.
And a company called Panelfly.
Oh, okay.
And they're offering a limited selection of Marvel comics for the iPhones. Now, I mean, obviously I'm dumb in this, but wouldn't Marvel just offer...
Well, you'd think that they would do that, but you know what? I guess they don't have the technology to invest, or they don't want to invest into the technology to offer comics as an iPhone product,
so they,
right?
So they license the comic to these three companies, and they format it to the iPhone?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
It's just like a video game, right? So Marvel doesn't necessarily want to go out and make its own video game, get involved in the technology, and on the computers, and the developing, and all that. They'll just give the license to somebody who actually knows what they're doing.
Right. Okay, well, the prices are, I guess, between 99 cents and $1.99.
Oh, okay.
Basically a dollar or $2.
Now, you know, I don't know if I'm all that keen on wanting to read a comic on an iPhone. I mean, the iPhone is
small.
It's super small, right? Like,
it's
I'm assuming that you wouldn't be able to get much more than a panel per like, kind of picture, I'll call it. Like,
yeah.
You know.
But the thing, though, is, and the thing that caught my attention here is they're doing older stuff. Like Marvel Zombies, Age of Apocalypse, X-23.
Age of Apocalypse? Really?
Yeah.
That's like 20 years old.
Well, okay.
maybe not 20.
But some
but
newer stuff, like
15.
Astonishing X-Men, but older stories and stuff. Now, I mean, not to paraphrase Dolomite here, that's like sucker-ass lame. My point is
who's going to want it?
No, well, you can find those books in bargain.
Yeah, you
bargain
can.
Basements
absolutely,
for a dollar or $2.
Yeah, for
right?
sure, for sure.
You can find the books, the actual books,
for like 50
for the same
cents.
Price or even less
than
what you're being, you know, charged to put it on an iPhone.
Yeah, see, it would be way cooler if they had brand new comics coming out this week offered on the iPhone.
Right. Yeah,
right.
I think they're, you know, they may be testing the waters for that with this.
Well, you know what? And then they're testing it with the wrong bait then, because nobody's going to want to go ahead and buy Age of Apocalypse for their iPhone when they can go and get the trade for $5 or $10 or whatever it happens to
be. Now, how does that work with the, I don't have an iPhone. I'm not sure how much memory these things take up. So, you know, on an iPhone, how many comics could you store on your iPhone?
A lot of these phones now have quite a big capacity for that stuff.
Right.
I mean, they probably wouldn't have much more memory it's taking up for say like two or three songs, and all these phones now can hold like, you know, 1,000 songs, right?
Oh,
so,
okay.
I don't think it would be that much.
Okay. All right,
mind you, it is pretty heavy in the graphics, and graphics does take up a lot of memory.
Right.
However, I still don't think it would be that much.
Maybe our listeners would.
I don't think it would be an issue.
Right. Okay. You know what? My industry. I get the industry news by going on the computer and surfing the internet world of comic dumb.
Right.
And pulling out interesting stories.
You mean that people don't write to you telling you stuff that?
Not yet.
Oh,
not
okay,
yet.
Okay.
And I pull out interesting stories, and I'm passing it on, and we're
passing it on
to
absolutely.
Our loyal viewers, and hopefully they're entertained by this stuff.
I hope so.
So
at least
I pulled
all
out,
five of them.
Yeah, I pulled out probably one of the most useless pieces of information I've ever pulled out.
Excellent. I look forward
to
it.
Do it.
Okay.
So SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yes.
I figured out how he got his name, or how reportedly how he got his name.
Yeah, so a guy named, because he has square pants?
No.
Oh.
A guy named Steven Hillenburg, who created SpongeBob.
Okay.
He originally called him SpongeBoy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, you see, Bob Burden, who created Flaming Carrot...
Yes.
...had already trademarked the name SpongeBoy.
Oh, okay, right.
And SpongeBoy actually appeared in... an Aardvark Vanaheim book, Avian 3D, back in 84.
Oh, you know, I actually remember that book.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I know, it's old, yeah, it's sad.
So the funny part is that Hillenburg,
yeah,
you know, was afraid that this guy would, you know, get mad.
Right.
Because, you know, Flaming Carrot sold huge.
Right. Yeah. And Mystery Men was a huge movie.
And the guy's name is Bob Burden, so the solution was, rather than SpongeBoy, he's going to call him SpongeBob.
Ah, right? Okay, yeah.
In honor of the creator of SpongeBoy.
Oh, well, that's very nice. Yeah.
So, I don't know if that's...
So now...
I don't know if that's entertaining or
not. Do we know anything about where he got these square pants from?
Well, he called them... No, not that, but he did have to leave the word sponge in.
Right.
This is what I read. Because sponge was important because he thought the kids would mistake him as a piece of cheese.
Oh, right.
He didn't actually call him
SpongeBob.
He kind of
does look like that, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So, got people, now you know.
Now you know the secret origin of SpongeBob SquarePants.
And you're welcome.
Right, well, thank you.
Oh, okay.
If anybody else knows any other secret origins of obscure cartoons, you're more than welcome to email us at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or mailbox@bigbcomics.com. And we look forward to these obscure secret origins.
Yes. Chris, Mound City Auctions in St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
Has just completed this past Monday a phenomenal 2-day auction where they raised approximately $1 million.
Really?
Yes. In about 900 or so
lots?
Slabbed, what do you call it, encased,
graded
comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the cool story behind this is in the collecting community, big, beautiful, big old collections don't come around that often.
No.
And this company, Mound City, is they're a real estate auction company.
Okay.
So they, you know, some guy forecloses his house.
Right.
They sell the real estate.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the homes, the curator or whatever of the home, the custodian, he found comics in the basement.
Oh, get out of town.
Now, the story I heard is that he offered the comics to the auctioneer for $5,000.
Okay.
So the auctioneer, this is the way I read it, the auctioneer probably didn't know anything about comics and thought he would be getting ripped off.
Okay.
So he countered with saying, no, I'll auction them for you.
Right.
But we'll just split half the profits.
Are you serious?
Yes. So what happened is, I guess the auctioneer starts emailing around and they start being inquisitive because somebody's aware the comics are worth money.
Sure.
And one thing leads to another, and they discover they're sitting on a gold mine. So they send a whole bunch of comics down to CGC in Florida, which is a company that grades comics.
Yes.
And some absolutely stunning stuff has come out of this collection. A 9.4 X-Men number one.
Get out of town.
Sold for $101,000.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
Yes.
Must have been some sort of celebrity that bought that.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, you know what? It was it's funny that they had online bidding.
They did, eh?
But they also had on-site bidding.
Oh, cool.
It was simultaneous.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would say about 80% of the sales of all the comics were on-site.
Right.
Winner on-site bidding. Yeah, on-site bidding. On-site
Well, because it's so much cooler to actually see what you're buying.
Yes,
you know, to want to go there. And,
What else? There was an Avengers number one, 9.4 out of 10. I think it got $60,000 or something.
That's
like
awesome.
That.
Wow.
Incredible.
Holy
so I'm
cow.
Thinking, how about the guy that almost gave this up to $5,000?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's happy.
Well, so now, as far as the auction goes, so it sold for like $1 million.
Right.
So each of those guys gets like close to $500,000.
Close to five. I mean, I'm sure there's expenses. They were advertising on the internet, and I'm
sure.
They probably ran up, I'm going to estimate, $100,000, $150,000 expenses because encapsulating them cost money and stuff. So, but I'm sure that they're,
you know,
half a million close to each.
Right. So even if they each got $400,000.
But the point is, I guess, the moral of the story is, you know, check your basement.
Absolutely. And
mail us, email us.
Don't
email Chris. Just email me.
No. You want to email me first, and then I'll get you in touch with Walt.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Yeah. All right.
Anyway. So, any more industry news?
Yes.
Lots. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Roger Rabbit.
From Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah. Walt Disney, Roger Rabbit? Apparently, they are writing a part two.
Really?
Now, I read this with interest because back when was that? 1988, right? 21 years ago. I really, really liked Roger Rabbit.
I quite enjoyed the first movie, yeah.
Okay.
So and that Jessica Rabbit, she's pretty hot,
she's
too.
Hot. Yeah, she's hot. She's hot. Now, I was always puzzled why there wasn't a part two.
That's true. It did very well in the theaters.
Oh, it was the biggest moneymaker of 88.
Right.
It did, like, those days' dollars, $325
million. Wow. Did it really?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
And it was the big movie of 88.
Okay.
And then I read, it was great, the story. I read, I guess, Spielberg, who had a part interest in it.
Yes.
Got snippy and got pissed off with,
Disney?
I guess, the other, Disney or Eisner, Because what happened is, after the success of Roger Rabbit, they were using those shorts. They were doing those 5-minute shorts.
Oh, yeah.
You remember they did one in front of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
Yeah.
Something about my tummy or something. Yeah, tummy trouble, actually. And then they did another one called Roller Coaster Rabbit.
Mm.
Now.
I remember that one.
Now, I guess the thing was, Roller Coaster Rabbit was supposed to go up in front of... I think it was Arachnophobia.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that's what Spielberg wanted. Yeah. But I guess Eisner knew that Dick Tracy was going to suck.
Oh, okay.
So he pulled Roller Coaster Rabbit and put in front of Dick Tracy
for
the movie release. So, and that pissed Spielberg off. And from that point on, I guess Spielberg was nixing any kind of creative rabbits.
You know what? There's been a strong. I don't know what you want to call it. They hate each other. They vehemently hate each other. Or at least they did at one point. Spielberg and Eisner. And, of course, that's why Spielberg started his own SKG production company so he could do his own thing. And, yeah, it was
I apologize for this, but, I mean, these guys are like little girls here. I mean, this is a gorgeous, gorgeous property for fans and for moviegoers and viewers. And their little squabble has kept a great franchise
out of
the public hands for 2 decades.
Yep, absolutely. But apparently not, because now it's, two decades, yes, but now it's coming back. You're saying,
I guess, but it took
.
I don't know. I guess it took a change in the structure of the companies,
right,
in order for it to come to light. So while they were sitting in their positions nothing was going to happen.
No, of course not. No,
that's not good. All right. What I'll close the industry news with is the fact that I'm going to ask you: do you know who will play Odin in the Thor movie?
Odin. No, I didn't know. I have no idea.
Yes.
Do you know who?
Yes, I do. Why it's the industry news, Chris, because I know.
Okay, is it Raymond Burr?
Raymond Burr.
No?
No. That would be Odin in a wheelchair.
Ironside.
Iron Burr. I mean,
Iron,
Odin Burr.
Odin Iron. Iron Odin, yes.
Yes.
Let me guess. Who's going to play Odin?
He was voted the most famous villain in moviedom.
Famous villain.
Yeah, like famous in the movies.
Jack Nicholas.
Almost. Okay.
Hold on. Just give me a second here.
He's a sir. He's a sir, and he
Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins, yes. He will play Odin.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool.
Yes.
Do we know who's playing Thor yet?
I think we do.
Do we?
Yeah, we do.
But we don't remember who it is.
No, we don't remember who it is, but Odin is being played by Anthony Hopkins.
Well, you know, that's kind of, you know, does that mean that he's going to be wanting to, you know, eat somebody's liver with a nice Chianti?
Bottle of Chianti?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
But I think they're going to, now, he's going to grow a thick beard.
Right.
And he's going to have a long mane, I think.
Right, right. And that's hair, for those of you who don't know
what
that is.
And I think he's going to talk like Arnold a little bit.
Really?
I don't know. You can't have a Midwestern accent on
Odin. No, he's not from Midwestern. He's from Britain.
Is he?
Yeah. Oh. That's why he's Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Well, you could have an English accent for...
you could. You
ever notice that in the old, Rome movies?
Oh, yeah.
If they all have English accents, you buy into them being Roman.
Absolutely. Right? Why is that?
I don't know. But if they have like a southern drawl, it's like, man, this is fake.
Yeah, it's so true. You know what? They in Rome, they should really have an Italian accent.
Italian accent.
But yet, if they have
use their hands a lot.
No stereotyping here whatsoever. Okay. But you're right. That's a very good point. It's an excellent. It's a very, very good observation.
And pretty well, use an English accent, you can be a Norse god.
Norse god.
You can be an Egyptian pharaoh.
You know what? And in the Star Wars movies, in the first Star Wars movie, all the bad guys had an English accent as well.
Yes. Didn't Alec Guinness? He wasn't a bad guy though.
No, but he didn't really have. He didn't really use it. Peter Cushing. He was Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yes, you're right.
Interesting.
Yes. So I look forward to that.
Absolutely.
I like everybody. Look forward to the Thor movie immensely.
Yeah, me too.
The fact that Anthony Hopkins is going to be in it, I think, is just going to be just
very
just
cool. Great. Very cool.
And you know what? It also kind of right away the fans know. Hey. They're serious about this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't get some schmuck to play it. This is Anthony Hopkins.
It's Odin, right? It's a big, big part.
Right. All right.
Okay.
We will stop the industry news.
Okay. And you know what? I'm gonna talk a little bit back about what we were talking about 5 minutes ago with the comic books and their values. And one of the things we've been doing this show for over a year now.
Over a year
we've been doing it now. And not once have we ever talked about investing into comics.
That's a good point, Chris. You're right.
And, you know, I think that obviously with what you're talking about with the auctioning of these comics and the value of comics, I think we should talk about what comics values are like.
You're right. That's a good topic.
And how to invest in comics. If somebody wanted to invest in comics, in case our listeners don't know, my illustrious co-host is actually an advisor for the Overstreet Price Guide. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is sort of like we call it the Holy Grail, the Bible of comic book dumb. For anybody that wants to know anything about values in comics, they go to the Overstreet Price Guide. It comes out once a year, and it's like it's as thick as a Bible, and it's got like 500 pages or something like that, and it's all
thousand
pages even. I don't know.
17,000 pages. I think.
It's not the Webster's Dictionary, but it's almost as thick, and it's got thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of listings for comic books in there.
Yes.
And so Walter, my co-host, is actually one of the advisors on how prices get what they get.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what comics get the prices that they get.
Yes.
And so, Walter...
Just to give you a secret, though.
Yes.
I usually pick mine. I look in the basement, see what I have the most of.
Right. That's excellent.
Yes.
Excellent, yes.
Yes, but I kid. But.
So, Walter, I'm going to ask you. So, you know, and I when I worked in the comic book store, because I did that for many, many years, decades, I think, almost, I used to get the same question all the time, and I'm going to pose that question to you right now. If I wanted to invest in a comic book, which are the good comics to buy?
Boy, Chris, that's a good question. No good answer. It would depend on a lot of things. Obviously, it would depend on how much money you have to invest. It would depend on when you're looking to liquidate your, cash in your return. There's short-term strategy, mid-term strategy, long-term strategy,
Okay, so let's say I come up to you and I'm, 37 years old and I'm, I've got $100 in my pocket.
Right.
Can I even do anything with that?
Probably not.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't do it with $100?
No, probably not. Believe it or not, probably not.
$100 is a lot of money.
Whenever you invest in comics these days, like I said, with $100, you can play the speculative game.
Okay, so
Speculative game in comics is things, they come out today, Wednesday,
right,
and they're hot today because something happened.
Right.
Something unexpected happened. We all know last year, almost a year ago, with the Obama Spider-Man.
So that
caught the public by surprise.
Right.
And the demand was massive after it hit the media.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you know, if you were savvy enough to kind of say, hey, I think this is going to be a big event.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to buy 20 of them.
Right.
Right? And so that'll cost you whatever, $60, $70.
Yeah.
And then it does turn into a big media event, and it does turn into a huge, you know, demand, but just kind of a spike in demand.
Right, right, right.
So what you do is, you know, you throw them on something like eBay or Craigslist or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, you paid $3-4 for them each, and you sell them for 15 or 20 each,
right,
right? Right. That's a speculative game, but there's never, you know, a guaranteed formula there. You have to kind of look at what's being solicited as coming out
right,
in a month
right.
or two.
So
for example, what happened again with Archie?
You know, with the marriage.
Right, when Archie got married. Now, some people could have, you know, you were forewarned months in advance.
Yep, yep.
So some people can say, hey, I think when Archie does come out,
yep.
I think the media will pick it up. I think comic shops will under order.
Right.
Thus, I will go to my comic shop and pre-order 50 of them.
Right, right, right. Okay, okay.
And then if I'm right,
yep.
that week, that day, I will post all 50 of them on eBay.
Right, okay,
so
fair enough.
This is a way to speculate on the value of comics.
Okay,
and it's definitely a spike interest in demand because, trust me, a week or 2 weeks later when the publicity fades,
the demand will fade. You almost have to buy and sell within a matter of days.
Right, that is one aspect of investing
okay, in comics. Okay, so let's take it and go to the next level. Let's say I have $1,000
right.
to spend. Now, what now? Do I take that speculative theory and go and spend, you know, instead of buying 20 copies of Archie Getting Married, do I buy 200? Or do I go ahead and I buy an X-Men number one?
Well, with $1,000, you probably couldn't buy an X-Men number one unless it was like a really rough copy. But
okay.
I'll take it to the second level. The window I just gave you the first time was, you know, like a loaf of bread type of thing where you know, you better get rid of it soon
right.
or else it'll go bad, your investment. Now, there are kind of midterm things.
Right.
Like, for example, I know a lot of people, about a year ago when they announced the Avengers movie.
Right, right.
That it's going to come out. It's going to be huge.
Yep, yep.
People started buying up Avengers number one like crazy.
Right.
Now, they bought up Avengers number one like crazy to speculate on the hype of the movie.
Right.
So I think a lot of these people will have the intention of selling this Avengers perhaps 2 months or 3 months before the movie actually hits, when the hype and the promotion for the movie
right, okay.
So this is kind of like, I guess, a medium term. The same thing could be said with Jonah Hex.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
First appearance of Jonah Hexes are actually being bought up now.
Yep.
I think the most intent is to sell them while the promotion for the movie's going
on. Fair enough.
This is kind of like a 1-2 year window.
And especially, I would imagine, especially like a Weird Western Tales where he his first appearance.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes. That would be All-Star Western 10.
Sorry, All-Star That's Western, okay. yeah, okay.
And then just jump off. You could also be in it for the long term.
Right.
And the only thing I would say to people that are want to invest in comics in the long term, obviously talk to somebody. Do your research.
Yeah.
Always buy a CGC graded, encapsulated. You may not know how to grade.
Right.
But the thing is, don't trust the person selling you that he or she knows how to grade.
Well, hold on.
Yeah, you can't, Chris.
Even with you, like, I mean, I
may think that's a 4 out of 10, and you know, the person eventually will want to get it professionally graded,
right?
And it comes back a 3.5,
right?
And then they go, oh, that bugger, he ripped me off.
Okay, fair enough.
In my eye, it's a 4, but my eye does not matter. In the market right now, the only eye that matters is the grading company.
Right,
eye.
Right.
So
fair enough.
Always buy graded comics if you're investing in them. If you're collecting, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But if you're investing in them, always buy graded comics. And the secret to success, sorry, we're running out of time and formula, is buy important comic books.
Right.
Comic books that have first appearances of characters that are relevant today and that you see as always being relevant.
Right,
so,
okay.
Amazing Spider-Man. Spider-Man will always be relevant.
Okay, quickly, you have a chance to buy one comic to invest in. If you have money is no object, what are you going to buy?
Action Comics number one.
First appearance of Superman.
First appearance of Superman. Right. Also the first, the introduction of the superhero genre.
Right.
And pretty well the comic that set everything in motion.
All right, sounds good. I would buy more copies of the first appearance of Power Girl, but that's
good
just
for
me.
You.
Yeah, you know.
The
so
30
any,
you have isn't enough.
The 30 I have isn't enough, that's right. So anyways, you know, unfortunately we have to go. It's taken up our half hour time slot. Once again, we are out of time.
Out of time.
And but we do thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed our show. If you have any comments or questions, please email us at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or mailbox at bigbcomics.com. Go out, support your local comic book dealer. Have a great day.
Have a great day. See you next week.